Welcome to the Chocolate Cake Bites podcast. This is a podcast where we will discuss the sweet nuggets of goodness that come from living the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm your host, Ken Williams. The opinions, attitudes, thoughts, and ideas that we discuss are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily a reflection of the actual doctrines of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Thanks for listening and enjoy this week's conversation.
And it is a conversation this time because Annette decided that instead of living her life, she would get on Zoom with me.
I did decide that.
So I appreciate that. So we talked about it. We were talking about, Annette and I were talking about a couple of things, and we decided that let's just start recording.
I love where this is going.
I don't know where it's going. I'm just talking.
I don't either.
So the thing that I was thinking, I've got a couple of things that have come up for me recently. The most maybe pressing, maybe that's a good way of saying it, is that I was asked to give a talk in church on Sunday, which is fantastic. I taught Sunday school last Sunday, and then I teach Elders Quorum this Sunday, and I'm speaking. So my ward is going to get a lot of me, which is not my problem. No. It sounds like it's a them problem.
It doesn't sound like it's even a problem.
It might not be a problem. So yeah. I had a good time going through the Come Follow Me stuff. We talked about being an instrument in the Lord's hands, what that meant. So that was good. And then my talk on Sunday is on mercy. And I am not going to do this. I'm not going to do the... I should point people to the Sean Rapier... you know what I'm talking about? The Latter-day Night Live?
Latter-day Lives Give a Talk thing?
Yes.
No, what is it?
It was Latter-day Night Live.
Latter-day Live, yeah.
And he did a bit. Sean Rapier he's a former guest on the podcast, and he used to do his own podcast, and he was in our state growing up. Great guy. And he's a comedian. I don't know how much he works as a comedian right now, but many years ago he was doing quite a bit, and he did this bit that was just hilarious. It's a Latter-day Saint themed bit with in front of a Latter-day Saint audience. This is in Utah, so a lot of people there that understand at least the context. Yeah. So he does this whole talk. I'll link to it in the show notes if I remember to do it. But he gets up and he starts his comedy bit as if it's a sacramenting talk. And so he does all the cliches. When the bishop asked me, all those things.
I thought, oh, you.
And then the other one was, if you look up comedy in the dictionary. And so I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to start my talk by saying, if you look up mercy in the dictionary. But I am looking up mercy in the dictionary because I think a lot of times in a lot of contexts, not just a religious context, I think a lot of times we use words and we assume we know what they mean and we may not. So mercy, this is dictionary.com. It is compassion or forgiveness shown towards someone whom it is within one's powers to punish or harm. Okay, so that's interesting. There's another definition here that says, what is the biblical definition of mercy? Mercy appears in the Bible as it relates to forgiveness or withholding punishment. Okay, so I think I have an understanding of that. And when I brought this up to you, Annette, you asked me a question. Do you remember the question you asked?
I said, can we even talk about mercy without talking about grace?
And I said, I don't know. So
I like that I was asking the hard question that time.
That is the best. And sometimes if I get frustrated, I just turn it back around and say, I'm asking the questions.
Yeah, that's
but I
didn't. Facts.
I just let this one go. So grace. Dictionary.com says it's simple elegance or refinement of movement. So I don't know. I don't think they have anything to do with
think you should read other definitions.
Courteous goodwill. Biblical definition of grace. Grace is the basis for the Christian faith. We believe that we are saved by faith through grace. God's grace is usually defined as undeserved favor. So I think No, I don't think they're the same thing, but mercy is an embodiment of grace. Does that sound?
Yeah, I wasn't alluding that they were the same thing, but I think I think they're linked and they shouldn't or can't be unlinked.
Because I think the mercy that we receive, going back to mercy, is forgiveness or withholding punishment. The mercy that we receive, the forgiveness or the lack of punishment that we receive, is an example of grace.
Yeah.
Am I thinking of that right?
I think so.
So there's a book by Adam Miller. Have you read this one, Annette? We've talked about it.
I've started it. I'm a very slow reader, but I am currently reading it.
It's called Original Grace. And I may have referenced it before on the podcast, but he starts his book by saying, basically, I'm going to ask more questions than I answer, which got my attention. And I think the title was intentionally kind of a play on original sin. We believe this is the article of faith, for at least for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, article of faith number 3, we believe that is through the atonement of Christ that all men will be saved. Do I have the number right?
I think so.
We'll be punished for our own sins, not for Adam's transgression. That is article of faith number 2. But so we believe that the fall of Adam and Eve was a necessary part of the progression of not just them, but the introduction of the entire human race. And so the original sin, in fact, in the article of faith, we call it Adam's transgression, not Adam's sin. So the, I think his play on original sin, I think it was intentional that even if we don't explicitly believe in the quote doctrine of original sin, that we are born sinners because of Adam and Eve's transgression, we tend to, even in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we tend to believe that original sin is a thing. And that's not a very elegant way of saying it, but I think that's part of the premise of his book. And so he tries to turn that on its head a little bit and says, what if God never punishes? What if God only blesses? So I think that's an interesting question to consider, that I believe, at least in my current view of the world today, as of the date of this recording. I'm going to do the same kind of disclaimer that you do. I reserve the right to change my mind at any point in the future, even on this very podcast.
Yes.
I think that that's an interesting question, because we talked a couple weeks ago with Julia about forgiveness. I think we don't have forgiveness figured out. I think as a people, as a human race, as a general culture, I'm not talking about individuals, I'm talking about as a group. We think that if somebody does something that we don't like, which you could say we're offended, they offend us. In biblical terms, when they talk about if you offend a child, it would be better that a millstone would be hung around your neck. And the word offend in that context means cause to stumble. If somebody causes you to stumble, if somebody does something that brings up maybe unkind feelings, we have this natural tendency to hold a grudge.
Yes.
And so I was listening to one of my coaches the other day, and he talked about that. And he just asked the question, why would you do that? Why would you hold a grudge? Why would you hold a negative thought about another person? Because it doesn't punish them.
No, but I think it protects us, or we think it's going to protect us.
Okay, I'll go with the think. We think it's going to protect us because I want to push back, and I haven't thought through this all the way yet, but does it protect us to hold a negative thought? I'm not talking about a boundary thought. I'm talking right. about a negative thought.
I don't think it does actually protect us, but I think that's like our natural man brain thinks that it will, right? Yeah. Because our brains are designed to protect us, to keep us safe. And so it tracks that that would be at least part of it, if not all of it.
So why does it seem to be such a universal experience that harboring these negative feelings, why is it that we think that doing that is going to protect us?
I don't know. Is it just one of those things that like happens if we're not actively preventing it from happening? You know what I mean? Like even like with being healthy, right? We have to actively be doing something. If we're not actively doing something to stay healthy, we're not healthy.
We're declining.
Yeah. If you're not actively doing something to strengthen, you are getting weaker. Like that's just what's happening. Mm-hmm. And so is it just part of that natural man state of, and maybe it's never been brought to our attention. Maybe we never even thought about it or realized that that was something that we had to actively be doing. I don't know. I'm going to think about that.
Maybe. Yeah. It's a good question. I guess I probably should think less out loud, or think more out loud and less just silently in my head. Otherwise, it's going to be a very uninteresting discussion. So let me think about see if I can come up with a situation, because I'm so close to perfect. Marcine says that when I'm next to her, you're just close to perfect. Yeah.
So close.
She's talking about herself as perfect, which there's some truth to that in many respects. But, so if I have somebody who has done something that I think is wrong, and I'm trying to think of a good example of this. I'm not going to divulge my own personal dirt on people that I think who have offended me, but if I can come up with a good example.
I have a situation I could use.
Okay.
Yeah. Without giving too much detail.
Sure.
We were in a situation where somebody's actions harmed us and our kids.
Okay. Like a physical harm or an emotional harm, or what kind of, and you don't have to talk about what specifically it was, but was it a
physical and spiritual?
Okay.
And emotional.
Okay.
Harm. For different people, right?
Right. So this is not something subjective, like they hurt your feelings. There's an objective,
yeah,
damaging component to it.
And prior to this incident, we had had a conversation with this person about a similar situation that had happened, where we had said, hey, if anything like this ever you're aware of this, something like this ever again, please come and talk to us so we could prevent this from happening. We will. We're so sorry. Great. So then fast forward a few months, a repeat thing. Mm. So like we were struggling because we're like, listen, we had this conversation. You said that you would come and talk to us and you didn't. And because you didn't, we now have to deal with this messy situation where somebody was harmed, you know, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. Mm-hmm. And, you know, aside from it just being like, they didn't handle the situation the way we would have, mm-hmm. you know, which took a while to get through and stuff, like holding on to that. Like, so that's what I thought of actually when you asked this question first, was how, you know, harboring that Like, how am I going to manifest that? Or how does that negatively affect me going forward? Or other than just, you know, not necessarily being terribly forgiving, having to sift through, you know, yeah. like, what does forgiveness look like? What is the involvement? Because it feels like there's a trust issue at that mm-hmm. point. Like, can I trust them to do what they say they're going to do to right. keep, you know, is that a good enough scenario for your, what you're thinking?
I think we can work with it. Okay. So there are a couple things that go on in my head. And here's one of the things. did they have a rational, not an explanation that you agree with, but in their minds, did they have a rational explanation as to why they didn't adhere to the plan that they had put out months
earlier? Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
So in their experience, they made what they thought was the best decision.
Uh-huh.
And
I have to assume, right? I don't know. Right, I would assume that.
So it just didn't match with what they had told you previously, and it didn't match with your values or your expectations or whatever, right? So I think there are a couple ways that you can handle the situation. And you mentioned the manifesting. This is something that came from my... Annette and I talked about earlier that whatever you harbor, whatever you hold on to, is going to manifest itself in your life. And we have not really fleshed this out yet. So, so I think my answer to that is there are a couple ways to look at this. I think there's a positive way to look at it and a negative way to look at it. I think there's a positive story and a negative story. We know there's opposition in all things. So there, wherever there's a positive story, or I should say, wherever there's a negative story, the story that they did something to hurt you, they did something to spiritually maybe manipulate, maybe whatever, harm in any way. Yeah. You may look at that's a negative story. Wherever there's a negative story, there's a positive story. And so as I'm just talking through this, I think... The way that I would interpret that is if you hold on to, if you adhere to, if you stay stuck to the negative version of the story, that they were out to get you, that they were whatever the circumstance looked like, then you end up creating negative versions of that story, not just in that area, but other areas of your life.
Okay.
So maybe you're on the defensive in a lot of your interactions or relationships with people because, quote, you were burned. Maybe you live your life so that you think people are out to get you. On the other hand, and you mentioned trust. So I have a unique, maybe, perspective on trust, that the fact that you trust somebody is, I think we're putting words into that sentence that don't belong there. Because me trusting you has nothing to do with you. Me trusting you is me trusting. You're an object. You're not an actor in that sentence. You're the object of the sentence. You're a direct object. But we've talked a lot, and I've been spending a lot of time thinking about this idea of being acted upon or acting. And I think that if you're acting, then you trust. Now, that doesn't mean that you leave your front door open or you leave the keys in the car. Trust is not the same thing as stupidity. I think that as you have a college student home from college right now.
Yes.
And you know her pretty well.
I do.
And you probably have some level of expectation of what she's going to do in certain circumstances.
Yeah.
So if and I'm not saying she would do this. If I'm thinking about, for example, a three-year-old kid, and I'm not saying that Sierra's 3 years old. I'm not trying to compare that. But you have a three-year-old kid who doesn't understand the effects of maybe sugar on their behavior, and you leave buckets of candy out, that three-year-old kid may make poor decisions.
This old lady might make poor decisions.
So it's not that you don't trust the kid. You have confidence. You have complete trust in the kid that if you leave the Twizzlers out, they're going to disappear.
Yes.
And so you adjust your behavior so that you don't put the other person in a position. And I'm just making this up as I go. So I may realize that I say something. I may realize that I'm saying something that I don't agree with. But you will modify your behavior. You're not controlling them, but you're modifying the situation, modifying the circumstance so that they don't end up in a position where they're going to behave in a way that you don't want. If you're dealing with somebody who has addictions, for example, it's not that you don't trust them. That's not why you leave computer access unfettered or... I know you don't have a whole lot of alcoholic beverages in your home, but you don't leave. It's not, sorry, Mom. It's not that you don't keep those things away from the person because you don't trust them. It's because you do trust them. You know exactly what their weaknesses are. And I think the better you know somebody, including yourself, the more that, I know things that I don't want to be around.
Right.
As Marcine and I are shopping, sometimes she will hold up a bag of chips. Do you want me to get these? No, I don't want you. Yeah, I'd love the salt and vinegar chips, but no, don't get them because if we get them, then I will eat them. I can't eat them if I don't have them here. It's not that I don't trust me.
Not that you won't eat them. You will eat them all right then.
So because if I don't eat them all right then, two things will happen. Number one, somebody else will eat them.
Yeah.
And then if they don't eat them all, they will leave the bag open. And in Indiana, that is bad because they get stale and soggy.
Yes.
So that was a lot of me rambling, but I'm going to pause for a second, just see if you have any commentary, thoughts, any pushback.
I sadly don't.
Oh, and my goodness. Where?
It feels really uncomfortable to me to not, yeah, but you, or,
sad.
You know, as you were talking, I was thinking to hold on to some of those things is to stay in a victim mentality.
Right.
Right. Like this person wronged me. Mm-hmm. So I can see how other times in your life, you might be looking for times that you were wronged or right. that you were like, you know, an innocent bystander in this thing that happened when right. we've talked before about, you know, on and off the podcast of what was my role in this? And yeah. So it might just simply be that you existed,
right.
that you were there at that time. And also the thing that we've talked about and you brought up again of we generally don't get up in the morning thinking, you know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to ruin this person's life, or I'm going to go out of my way to harm this person. Like I can't say I've ever done that.
Yeah.
Intentionally. Right. Like now there are times where you're like, you maybe lash out in anger, but I don't even think we're
right.
our natural. I don't even think we're going like premeditated. You know what I'm going to do?
Yeah.
And so to give that person the benefit of the doubt, as far as they probably did think that they were making the best decision, or maybe they were in a situation they had never been in before and they really didn't know how to handle it. And yeah. they're like, I might've just blown that, you know, like I know I've been in situations that I never imagined myself having to be in this situation before. And I handle it poorly because I have no experience.
Right. Yeah. I think, kind of going back to where we started with this is we have, something that you said that got me thinking, if we hold on to something negative like that, then we manifest that in our lives. And it's not that necessarily we're manifesting that same negative thing, but we're manifesting the victim mentality. If you believe yourself to be a victim, and I want to be clear that I'm not talking about, there are times that we truly are victimized.
Right.
But I saw a video the other day that I loved, where there was somebody talking to somebody else about their victim mentality. And they said, you are the CEO of your life. If you're looking at a company and they're doing well, the company's doing well, record profits, they're growing, who's ultimately responsible for that? It's the CEO. On the flip side, if you have, you can just pick a company that isn't doing well, like Blockbuster. They didn't pivot when they needed to pivot. They didn't expand the way that they needed to expand. They maybe made some wrong decisions. But, and same thing is true with your life. If you're not having the life that you want, whose fault of that is that? It's not your dad's fault or your mom's fault or your sister's fault, sorry, or your brother's fault. It's not the fault of your teacher in fourth grade who told you that the way you did your homework or didn't do your homework or your excuse for not doing homework was a cop-out, not a true story, absolutely a true story. It's because life happens. If you look at business, general business, life happens. There are unkind things that happen. There are hostile things that happen in business. And the effective, successful CEO is going to adjust and respond, not just react. And so I think, I can't wait to see how this gets back to Mercy, by the way, but I think that for us, the same is true, that as we, things happen. Somebody steals my lunch money, or somebody took my locker, my preferred locker at the gym, or somebody runs into my car in the parking lot. Things happen. And as we adjust and move forward, if we're clinging to the victim version of the story, then we're going to continue to create new victim versions of stories. That's what we're going to attract. And not that we're attracting it. That's not necessarily, it's not that we're manifesting those victim stories, but what you focus on expands. And so if you focus on your victim role in your life, then that's going to expand. And you're going to continue to see greater in greater and greater detail the different ways that you are a victim in your story.
On so is that side, like confirmation bias?
Absolutely confirmation bias. Our brain is focused so much on, let me change what I'm trying to say there. There are so many inputs into our brain that we have to filter a good deal, most of it out. And if there's a filter, if something's going to be filtered, it's going to be something that does not align with what you're thinking, believing, wanting to have in your life. And so, and this is the amygdala. Is that what it is? I can't remember my brain, but the, there's a term when I got a new car several years ago, got my new Hyundai Elantra Silver. I start seeing those. Here's a better example. I read an article that talked about purple trucks. How common is a purple truck? When's the last time you saw a purple truck?
I actually probably have seen one in the last months because I remember going, wow.
Okay. So you remember some vague period of time. If you have, and just because of this article that I read, I have in my brain to notice every time I see a purple truck and I see them.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I see them once a week or so. And I saw a couple weeks ago. Yeah. So I get excited every time I see a purple truck. I saw a purple semi. I saw a purple Jeep one time. That was great. I saw a purple motorcycle, not a truck, but I saw a purple boat. I love seeing purple vehicles. But if you're, and you've seen them, you probably just haven't picked up on it. And that's what our brain, reticular activating system, that's what it is, the RAS in the brain. So all the stuff, now that we're on way out on a tangent, but this is an example of something somebody did with me one time. I want you, if you just look around and you look at all the red things, just pick up all the, just notice all the red things as you're looking. And if you're still with us on the podcast listening, I'm sorry. We're random today. But just look around the room and notice everything that you can notice that's red. And I'll give you about a second to do that. Okay. Now close your eyes.
Okay.
Your eyes are not closed, Annette. Okay, there you go.
Yes, they are.
Okay. Close your eyes. And I want you to just remember, just tell me everything that you looked at, because you just looked around your room. Everything that you...
Wait, my room? I was looking at your room.
Oh, my room? Okay. Look around my room then, or think about everything in my room that you can see that's green.
Okay.
So what specific things do you remember that were green in my room?
Green?
Yeah.
You had a couple of plants.
Not that you can see.
Then nothing.
So the point is that you weren't looking for green. You're looking for red. And so if you are looking for victim stories or victim proof of your stories, you will find it. It doesn't mean that the victor version of you in the story isn't there. You're just not noticing it. You're not picking up on it.
Right.
And so that's how I am now, as I've talked through this. That's how I am on board. That if you are holding on to a negative story, back to your story, if you're holding on to a negative story, then you're going to manifest that negativity in your life. On the other hand, there is a positive version of the story. And the positive version of the story might be, I have learned that not everybody is going to protect me or my kids the way that I want.
Yeah.
And so I need to get on the front end of that. So as an example, I'll give you a story. I got a letter a month and a half, 2 months ago, something like that. Got a letter that was hurtful, was not kind. I think it was written. I think the person who wrote it thought they were being kind. I think the person who wrote it had a good intent. It did not come across that way. And because of how it affected, it wasn't just affecting me, it was my family. And so I'm not the only person in my family who read it. I read it several times, but I read it two different ways. I read it from my perspective as a victim, and it was hurtful. It was unkind. It was rude. It was accusatory. It was all sorts of negative things. And from that perspective, it created some really unkind feelings in me towards this individual who wrote it.
Uh-huh.
I read it again. And this time, I don't know if I've mentioned this, but I'm a coach. And I was really thinking about, from my coaching perspective, and we've talked a little in the past about the coaching model that I use, that circumstances are neutral. The circumstance in this case was I got a letter. And secondarily, as I was reading this letter, I separated out the circumstances, the facts in this letter from the thoughts. Thoughts are not neutral. Thoughts create the positive or negative experiences that we have. And so I separated out the facts from the thoughts in this letter. And the letter was 98% thoughts and 2% facts. So reading it with that lens, that this person is just sharing their thoughts with me, even when there was an accusation, it's not a fact that I did this or didn't do this. That's a thought. That's an interpretation.
Right.
And that gave me a totally different perspective of this whole experience and more compassion towards the person that, oh, this person is in tremendous pain. And maybe I'm part of that. Maybe I'm part of the reason. That's a whole different conversation. But thinking about it from that perspective changed my experience. And so which version of those stories is going to benefit me more?
Well, and because I've had this conversation with myself, you know, many times over the years, it's, but what if I'm wrong? What if they were being malicious?
Okay.
And for me personally, it's, that's okay.
Right.
Because it makes me happier.
It's false alarm.
It makes me happier to assume good intentions.
True.
It makes me happier to assume that everybody just thinks I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Which you are.
And there may be people that don't think that, and that's okay. Right. And, you know, like, and I'm okay with it. So like with your letter, like maybe their intention was to be unkind, but that doesn't mean you have to take it that way.
True.
Because what if you took it that way, but their intention was not right? Like we're okay being wrong the one way, assuming ill intention, but so it's interesting that we sit a little bit more uncomfortable to be wrong by assuming good intention.
Yeah. So what's the downside? What's the problem if we assume good intent, but there really was bad intent?
There is no downside, but I think it feels scary and threatening to our brain.
So why is that?
I don't know.
I was hoping that you'd answer, so I don't have to be the answers for everything on this.
Our brain likes to, at least, maybe this has just been my experience with my children and my life, mm-hmm. is like, it thinks it can tell the future.
Yeah.
It thinks it's very good at predicting
and we're
everything.
So bad. We're so bad at it.
And it's literally the worst. In fact, wrong most of the time.
Yeah.
Yet we still, and we've talked about this too, man, we can just talk about everything and bring it all
yes.
in full circle.
It's going to come still, back because I've got a way to get it all back there.
We still believe it when it lies to us instead of like going like, listen, brain, you lie to me all the time.
Yeah.
You're trying to keep me safe. So I'm not in danger in this scenario. It's okay if I think that everybody likes me and I'm wrong. That's okay. But it's also uncomfortable to let people be wrong about you.
Yeah.
So,
but you don't have any other alternative. So just to bring the point home, before we started recording, you told me about your flight.
Yes.
And where your brain went after your flight schedule was changed. So just tell that story as an example of how our brain predicts the future unsuccessfully.
So we bought some flight tickets, and 2 days after we bought them for specific flight times and layover times.
And 2 days after the layover was a long layover because it gives you time.
Gives me time. I need time. Flying is very difficult for me post brain injury, and so I need time to reset. And calm my brain down because my brain literally thinks that I'm going to die. It is in absolute fight or flight. My nervous system's completely triggered. And so I need time to bring it back down to baseline.
Right.
And 30 minutes isn't going to cut it. So we had a 3-hour layover and we got a flight, a little email saying, hey, your flight schedule changed. And, you know, it's always an inconvenience when that happens. And usually it's just a few minutes, so it's not a big deal, but they changed it by 3 hours. So our 3.5-hour layover was now 33 minutes or something like that. And my brain immediately went to, I'm going to spend the next 3 months stressed out and anxious about not making the layover. And it's the last flight of the day out of that city. So we're probably going to get stuck overnight, which means our trip is one day shorter than it was originally going to be. That's this where my brain see, immediately.
This is to see grandkids. And so it's not really important.
It's not a big deal. Whatever. It's fine.
But then, and not only that, not only the quick layover and the tight schedule, but the fact that you weren't going to have that decompression time.
Right.
That was a major thing. And so, it was not long after that freak out started that you went to your,
I stewed on it for 2 days.
And then I went to
my brother, who's like adept at travel. He travels a lot. He knows all the tips, tricks, ins and outs.
He's traveling today, by the way.
I wanted somebody to commiserate how miserable my lot was and to give me some sympathy.
Yeah.
And he said, we can fix that. Do you want me to do it for you? What? I said, yeah, in fact, I'm going to like cry real tears if this is true. I said, what information do you need? I sent it to him. And 15 minutes later, he texted me and said, change is made. It's done.
Nice. Our brains are horribly bad at guessing.
They're terrible.
This goes back to, not that this is going to become a goals episode, but it goes back to my idea, my issue with goals, that we're just bad at guessing how long it's going to take for us to accomplish the thing. So so there you go. I think going back to this, we're going to touch on a lot of things from a lot of different episodes. But the natural man, our brain thinks that it's protecting us from danger when we harbor the feelings of unkindness or whatever. So because we seem to think that if I hold a grudge against this person who wrote me this, what objectively would look like to many people a very unkind letter. Mm-hmm. If I hold a grudge, what's the effect on them?
None. They don't even know.
Right.
Most situations, they have no idea how you feel.
I'm reminded of a time that Dad, I think he was the bishop at the time, and he went to visit a woman who had not been coming to church. And she said, well, I'm not coming to church because I was offended by somebody. And he, in his very personable way, said, well, I hope it wasn't me. And she said, actually, yes, it was you.
It was you.
And have you heard the story?
I don't know if I have.
So she was going for a walk.
I can just picture Dad.
Yeah. So he acted shocked and I'm so sorry. What did I do that was so offensive? She said, I was going for a walk in the neighborhood and I passed by you and I said, hi, you didn't say hi back. So as he discussed this further, he realized that he was working on the car. He was probably changing the oil underneath the car and did not know anybody walked by. And he finally was able to make his point when he said, oh, if I was under the car, I didn't have my glasses on, I wouldn't have seen that it was you. And that didn't hurt Dad at all. He Right. didn't even know about it. But mm-hmm. she was holding on to this anger, this resentment. And we do this all the time. It's so easy to see in other people. It is so hard to see in ourselves because we still want to justify.
Right.
So going back, I said I was excited to see how this is going to come full circle. And here it is. Here's how it's going to come full circle. Back to Adam Miller. He makes the assertion. Maybe it's not an assertion. Maybe it's more of a theory that what if God doesn't punish people? That is not God's plan. God's in the business of blessing people. not punishing people. And we have scriptures that seem to, and I'll put air quotes there, seem to disagree that if we are blessed, it is only because of obedience to the laws and the rules that those blessings are contingent upon. So I'm going to say just maybe suspend judgment on that at this point, because there might be a slightly different way to interpret some of those things. But what if God is merciful? Meaning, when we deserve punishment, we aren't punished. I think that's the definition of mercy. Mm-hmm. He rewards our evil, our badness, our poor choices with kindness.
Right.
So,
but this is all that we know.
Right. That's true.
All we know is opposition, the consequences. That's all we know. So it's so difficult for our brains to even comprehend that something else could be possible.
Which goes back to the natural man. This is how our brains were designed. They were designed on purpose, and it has served us well in many respects. Yeah. But when somebody writes an unkind letter to you, it doesn't serve you to punish them. I'm going to punish this person with my lack of presence in their life. And they may just think, I'm busy, or that I am, because I live 4,000 miles away, not a true story, that I just am not present.
That reminds me, like, I had a friend years and years and years ago that I cut her hair. Uh-huh. That was my profession. And she stopped coming to me. And I didn't think twice about it.
Yeah.
Because I had separated out my professional interactions with my personal ones, mm-hmm. right? People find somebody else that they like better all the time. That didn't ever hurt my feelings. If somebody was like, I'd rather have this person cut my hair. Like,
right.
Great. That's awesome. You should find somebody that you love, and maybe it's not me, and that's okay. And months later, she came to me and she said, didn't you notice that I was mad at you? And I said, no, I did not notice. Well, didn't you notice I stopped coming to get my hair cut? Well, yeah, I did notice that. I just figured you've had somebody else that you liked or worked better with your schedule. Like, I had no idea I had offended her and hurt her feelings, and she was punishing me. I had zero idea. So then how effective was that punishment?
So what I'm hearing from you is, if you're going to punish somebody, make sure they know it.
Make sure they know they're being punished.
And this message has been brought to you by the Chocolate Cake Bites Podcast.
But this is like making me, and I've already been there a little bit, but it's taken me one step further into rethinking, what does it mean to overcome the natural man? Because I don't think it means what I was taught that it meant. I don't think it means what I was led to believe that it meant, that had to do with our carnal nature, unless you want to redefine carnal nature. That maybe it's more about not succumbing to our first thought.
Yeah.
You know, that's just a small part. And it's like I said, I'm still evolving at that. What does that actually mean? But I don't think it means what we thought it meant.
I agree. And I think it's much broader than what we thought it was. And in defense of those who taught you a different focus on that scripture, I suspect they didn't have any idea.
Yeah.
That's what they'd been taught. Or in the scripture, it talks about that we've got to turn from that carnal nature. And I think a lot of times we think about carnal nature and we think of lustful, earthly desires rather than carnal is flesh and blood. That's our carnal nature. The carnal nature of our body is the fact that we have meat on our bones. Yeah. So what if God is not in the business of punishing, God is in the business of being mercy, and we want to become like him, then we can be in the business of being merciful, kind. What's the drawback? What's the drawback to that?
I don't think there is one, but it feels scary.
Yeah.
To step into that unknown or put trust into that. You know, I think there's some comfort in, and this could be a whole other conversation. There's some comfort in that God that punishes us for wrongdoing.
Because we think we deserve
familiarity.
It. Yeah. Well, we think we deserve it.
Yeah. Well, and so to step into and people could go other ways. Well, then what would be the reason that anybody would do anything? And that's not what we're saying. We're right. not saying, you know, you can do whatever you want and it's fine.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. That's not what I'm saying.
I think it's scary to our natural brains. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah. But the, I'm going to make a statement and I'm going to end on this probably because.
Well, we'll go to part two later.
We may have to go to part two. Our subconscious brain is nefarious. Subconscious brain, I think, is the natural man. It is nefarious and deceitful. It will tell us lies. And I'm talking about subtle lies. This is why I love that natural man scripture, because this is the way that I see the natural man. It's our subconscious. The natural man, our subconscious brain, is an enemy to God. And it does not want us to know the truth. It does not want us to know the truth. The truth is, here's my hypothesis. The truth is completely letting something go, completely forgiving, is freeing and beautiful and safe. Our subconscious mind does not want us to know that. And so it just puts fear in our hearts. It doesn't give us, in fact, I think a lot of times when we have that fear response, we don't even know what we're afraid of. Yeah. And so as when you dig into it, you get these smoke screens like, well, then I'm letting somebody off the hook. What hook? They're not on a hook. There is no hook. Dad didn't know that he was on a hook. But it feels so right that if I forgive, then they're off the hook. They're not on a hook. But our subconscious brain keeps telling us this story because it does not want us to forgive. And the scientific version is that it's there to keep us safe. Now, we're not talking about boundaries. We're not going to get into boundaries. Right. Boundaries are appropriate. They're important. That's what creates the safety.
But boundaries isn't like holding a grudge or, you know, boundaries is different. I'm glad that we talked about that, you know, whenever we did.
Yeah. And it'll come up again because they're so important and I think they're really misunderstood. But our subconscious mind will tell us stories. It'll tell us that we're being foolish if we trust somebody, for example, but that puts us back into victim mode. Our subconscious mind wants us to be a victim. I don't know if that's true. It just came out.
So I'm just having this thought right now.
Oh my goodness, more thoughts.
I know. Hold on. It's very elusive. When we don't forgive, when we don't let people off the hook, we are isolating ourselves from other people.
True.
Don't trust them. Don't engage. Mm-hmm. Very, very isolating behavior. But we aren't supposed to be isolated.
No.
So I think I'm going to agree with you.
Oh my goodness.
About the subconscious. But basically read Adam Miller's book because it's fantastic. And it's going to challenge a lot of things that make you feel really uncomfortable, but they also feel very true.
Yes. Because we want to believe that God is merciful. We want to believe that he is kind. But we also want to believe that the guy who did something so bad is going to be punished. And in that sense, we believe that God's in the punishment business. And I don't know that he is. So we'll talk more about that later. Any final words before I kick you off?
You know, just be kind.
Be kind. Love everybody. I knew that was going to come up. Thanks for listening. We'll talk about something else super exciting next week. Thank you for listening to Chocolate Cake Bites. Please like, share, subscribe, and give us a 5-star rating and review. We'd love to hear your comments and ideas, and you can reach out to me at ken@chocolatecakebites.com. And before you end the day, take a few minutes to consider, who do you know who needs chocolate cake?